I also want to introduce my co-presenter, Megan Rimmelsbach. She is the senior
research program coordinator.
We have lots of titles. Oh, did I do it? We're dimming it? Okay. Oh, you did it. Okay. All right. You liked it off? She said she liked it off. Maybe we can dim it. So I just wanted to introduce Megan. So we'll present together.
So the title of our presentation today is Inner City Young Adults in a Workforce Development Program, the Intersection of Employment and Social Support. We have no relationships to disclose. We'd like to start off with our acknowledgments. We received a lot of help that made this project possible, and we're really appreciative of all the support we received. We'd like to thank our funders, the Center for Urban Families, who was our sort of community organization partner, our other research team members, Chris, Winston, Shauna, and Nan, our participants, and also you guys for coming out today, sort of being interested in what we're talking about and listening to us this morning. Just to give you a little bit of an outline for our presentation today, we're going to do a little bit of an introduction and talk about workforce development in the U.S., sort of the intersection of social support and workforce development. We'll give you some context for our project and talk about the Center for Urban Families and one of their special programs called Strive Baltimore. Then we'll go into a little bit more about our current study, some of the methods, and Terry will talk about some of the themes that came up in our qualitative interviews, and then we'll have a discussion part at the end. So first we're going to talk about workforce development. 4.3 million young adults in the U.S. are neither in school or working. When I think of this statistic, a lot of questions pop into my head. 4.3 million people, if they're not in school and they're not working, what are they doing, right? And sort of the next question is, are they doing what they want to be doing? And if they're not, how did they get to this place and how can we support them to get to where they want to be going? And for some of the people who fall into this category, they actually do want to be gainfully employed. And one resource that can help them get there are workforce development programs. Very generally, workforce development programs are designed to increase job readiness. Oftentimes, they're very short-term, and they focus on skill building. The U.S. Department of Labor spends $18 million annually on workforce development, and currently they're supporting 47 different programs. There's sort of this idea that one workforce development program doesn't fit all, so there's some variation sort of within what's offered. And one example of that is combination programs. And combination programs are programs that address multiple risk factors. So they have sort of the skill building piece that they need to get the job, but then they sort of add other things into that. For example, they may add healthcare services. So now we're going to sort of talk about social support and workforce development and this intersection that can happen. As the previous speaker was alluding to, early life stress exposure can have far-reaching consequences across the lifespan. It can affect health and wellness. It can also affect, in negative ways, work outcomes. Living in a disadvantaged area can also negatively affect mental health. And sort of the idea is that if you have sort of both of these two things going on, if we can find a way to have workforce development programs sort of address these things that impact health outcomes or work outcomes, but also sort of addressing some of the health outcomes. So one idea is to integrate social support into workforce development programs to mitigate these life stresses.
So this study was done in partnership with the Center for Urban Families, and I should say, you know, the Center for Urban Families, it started in the late 90s, almost in response to the wave of programs that had been out for women and girls, and so it started really for men. So the idea was like, hey, we need to really support the men in our communities. The organization is located in West Baltimore, and if you know anything about Baltimore, both East and West Baltimore have a lot of issues, and over the past decades or so have really been hit hard by economic crises. So the basic mission of the Center for Urban Families, and I'll call them CFUF, that's what we use lots of acronyms, is to strengthen urban communities by helping fathers and families achieve stability and economic success. So like I said, they started as a father-focused organization. Fast forward from 1999 to now, like, it's not just fathers who need support. And fathers are really a part of family, so why not think about, like, the kids that are involved and also the, you know, the wives or girlfriends or partners who are involved. So really what they do, they focus on two areas. I'm just kind of going down to that last bullet point, family stability and economic success. And for them, this is like an integrated model because they don't think that really, like families, it's hard for a family to like move forward and be together if there are constantly economic crises or financial situations. So they really try to focus on both of those things in tandem as they move forward and work with families and fathers. One of the programs in particular is Strive Baltimore. So Strive is not, and it's called Strive Baltimore because it also exists in other places, and it was actually started in Harlem. But in Baltimore, it's a four-week intense attitudinal, is what they call it, soft skills training. And it's not, so when I initially started this, I was like, oh, is this like the same thing as job training? This is like Job Corps. What's happening here? And the thing is, they're like, not really, because we're not really training them to work on a specific job. They're not offering construction skills. They're not offering skill, like very skill-based things. They're saying, you need to know how to write a resume. Like, we want to prepare you to work. So the job that you get when you leave here may not be the job you always want, but you'll always need to know how to write a good resume. You'll always need to know how to interview. You'll always need to know, like, how to answer questions that may or may not be comfortable. So, again, workforce development seems to be a much more appropriate term for it because there's no one job that they expect people to do when they leave. And so it's 4 weeks, literally from 9 to 5, they have to come. So I was just like, man, you know, we've talked about this program often. And I was just like, you know, and they have a pretty big drop-off rate. And they said they know that it's in part because people get jobs during this time. So if you have to be at this job, this workforce development program from 9 to 5, and you find another 9 to 5 job, that's probably not going to work. So they have lots of different opportunities that they offer throughout the course of the 4 weeks. And at the end, there's a graduation, which may not, you know, like I think all programs should have some kind of celebration. But what our partners have often said is that many of the people who've gone through this program have never graduated. So I'm sure many of you have graduated lots of times, have lots of degrees behind your names. But to go through a four-week program and, so our last picture is actually a picture of one of the graduations, and everybody gets a certificate, their families are there. Like, it really is an amazing, like, opportunity to show that they've completed something and they feel like they're moving forward. So this is a part, of course, this analysis is part of a larger study, but for this project, we really wanted to better understand the need for and the provision of social support for these African-American young people who participated in the STRIVE program.
So we chose to focus on young people in the STRIVE program, 18 to 24 years old. The Center for Urban Families offers services for people in a much broader age range. We're from the Center for Adolescent Health, so we're sort of particularly interested in the transition from childhood to adulthood. Also, another sort of reason why we chose that age range is the probability of entering poverty is highest in young adulthood than any other time in the life course. Just to give you a little background on our participants, we had 20 STRIVE graduates that we did interviews with. They all were aged 18 to 24. The majority of them were female. Nearly all of them, which is 90%, had a high school diploma, GED, or higher education. At the time of the interview, more than half were employed. And also at the time of the interview, over a third reported having a history of incarceration.
So qualitative data analysis, we had a semi-structured interview guide, it was a life history interview, so we wanted to kind of understand, similar to our earlier presenter, like what happened before you came here, and then what happened afterwards. And what's not presented here, but what was also included, we also got a second interview from a significant other to ask them, kind of what happened with this person, and then what's happened since they've left, so look out for that in another paper and presentation. So we and they also, in addition to the interview protocol, they also completed a demographic questionnaire, which is how we got, like, who we were interviewing, more information. We recruited recent graduates, so folks who had graduated within the past year, And we wanted to make sure that this, you know, to get folks to, as any good qualitative person would do, like wherever is convenient and whenever is convenient is where we'll be. And that's how it happened. And we work really closely with our partners to think about how to incentivize this project. We're like, oh, should we get cash? Should we give family-focused things? They're like, money always works. So we started with gift cards, and we also were able to work with our IRB to give cash at the end. So $20 cash. So everything was recorded, verbatim, Atlas TI, content analytic approach. I'm just trying to rush through this because I think the results are way better than this part. And you can read the paper. Together we could develop a code book and the consistency of coding. We used two research team members, analyzed all of the, read every single interview so that we can make sure that no one person was coding, that there was reliability. So what did we find? And that's Obama. So Obama went to their organization because he was really focused on family. Oh my goodness, let me move. There were a range of issues that came up. And so the biggest three that we want to focus on are first the experience of childhood trauma. And, you know, like similar to the ACEs, this idea that what we found in these young adults, that there are tons of things that emotional and mental and physical experiences that they had when they were younger, they kind of put them in this, that place them in a vulnerable situation. And nearly all of the participants were raised by a single parent or relatives who weren't their parents. And this, well, usually inherently that is not a bad thing. That was usually the result of parental substance abuse. So if you know about Baltimore, Baltimore is the heroin capital of the country. So lots of young people have parents who have addiction issues. And so, for example, one graduate said, as far as my family is concerned, well, it's been tough, but easy at the same time. My mom, she was a user. My father was a user. My father wasn't around. And my oldest brother, he took care of us. And I have three brothers. And that is not an outlier of a story. In addition to parental substance abuse, limited financial resources. And we know this. Like, yeah, this really isn't nothing. This really isn't anything new. But what is really, the reason we really wanted to make sure that this came into our papers and our dissemination efforts was that this puts a picture, this gives a context to the actual statistics we sometimes see. So we realized that the causes and responses to financial difficulty were really different, even among this sample who we would normally think like, oh, like maybe everything's the same. Not really. So some folks, they had problems because, you know, their parents just didn't have really good jobs. Other people, they had parents with major medical illnesses, and that caused their family to have issues. Whereas some folks, they got lots of support from other family, whether it's big brothers and aunts. Other people, they didn't get as much support, so they ran away. Like the second quote here from the graduate, oh wait, she's a female. She said, they used to fuss a lot about money situations. When I was in high school, I got tired of hearing about it, so I ran away for 2 months. It was really hard for me because they would only fuss about things that aren't important most of the time. So, you know, again, like the causes and responses to financial stressors were different. So they go to a workforce development training program. Over half of the folks said that they knew about this program because someone they knew had gone through the program. So they kind of expected it was gonna be challenging and it was gonna be tough. And they expected to get some of the things like, you know, writing resumes and explaining, interestingly enough, explaining one's criminal background. What was also important, though, based on the interviews, was that the things that they learned, they started to translate them into other settings. Like the first participant here, he said, like I said, as far as I learned a lot of things to help me at home with my children, it taught me to be more patient with them. It taught me things with my spouse for us to maintain communication so there's less stress in the household. So this idea that good communication is good communication. Being able to effectively tell people what you want, how you feel is good, both at work but also at home. And this is something actually that our partners didn't realize what was happening, that because they were focused on like getting people jobs and how do you maintain keep a job and stay on a job and communicate well. And here is really what we thought was the most important part of this, is that this was really a transformative experience for a lot of the young people. who went through this program. As I mentioned earlier, they'd gone through a lot of things. But this felt like a family. They called Strive like the Strive family. And so for people who have families, we might take that for granted. But for others, when you haven't had someone to support you all the time or to someone to say, that was a bad idea, but I know you can do better, like you can get over this hump, it's great. And so in this 4 weeks and moving forward, they really identified with this. So there's a part of this training, this four-week training program called Stand and Deliver, where participants are invited, to share their past hurts, present issues, and future goals. It was usually described as a really emotional time where a range of issues were discussed. And folks felt like it allowed them to just get some of the things off their chest that they hadn't really been able to talk about ever to anybody, and move forward from it. And I think, one of our conclusions, like this idea is like, so what? Like, first of all, we know that young people in these workforce development programs, they have a range of histories and needs, and to just ignore that would be really a disservice almost. So this idea that, yes, people come to workforce development programs to find a job, but there are lots of other things that we might be able to address while they're there. So this model of we build it and they'll come may not work if they're not coming. But in this setting, it may work. Like, this is a job, workforce development space where people are coming for one thing but can get a lot of other things. So, and we know that it can be a source of support, and it was for the young folks in our study. And like I said, the skills designed to increase employability can be transferred to other settings. And that's something that our partners have been thinking about. It's like, what else might we be able to transfer besides communication? Are there ways we can think about money management and budgeting? Yes, like for if you have a cashier job, but also in your family finances. Like, how do we build this into our program so that our young people, well, our participants are getting everything they need. And then last, but certainly not least, was that service integration is needed and possible. And similar to the last research, I like the idea, so I'll steal it for a second. He had on his slide, evidence-based integrated treatment. And that's something that we need to consider. And it may not be in the places that we would have typically thought. So maybe not in a hospital, or maybe not in a juvenile justice. But those places may work. But what about workforce development programs? What about churches? That's some of the other work that I do. What about all of these other places where people are and we can probably give services? So now, this is where we're going. We want to disseminate our findings, and there are, of course, some practical implications. CFUF is already thinking about hiring. How do they institutionalize this idea? How do they institutionalize mental health? Because once these issues have arisen, they try to refer people, but we know what referral rates are like. So they really want this to be in-house. And some folks from our research center, they create a model for that, so we're hoping that it can keep going. So thank you so much.